Welcome back as we head into hour two. I am Seth Leibson, David Dahl here with me, and the phone number for you to join if you'd like to, it's 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We shall reason together on a piece of history that took place today at the Arizona Supreme Court that the nation is now focused on, as is every politician, as is every lawyer. The Supreme Court in the state of Arizona has ruled that the not 2022 15-week restriction on abortion law that Doug Ducey signed in 2022 will take effect, but rather the much older abortion law that was first written in 1864 and recodified in 1977 and 1978, prohibits abortions after conception but for the life of the mother. Perhaps the most restrictive statute on abortion in the country, as far as I know. For a better legal analysis of what the Supreme Court in Arizona did decide, I would refer you back to my interview with Kathy Herod in the previous hour, of which it will be posted at our website, 960thepatriot.com.
Will be.
Already is. Happy to take your calls on this. One of the interesting divides to watch in the pro-life community, in the conservative movement, in the Republican Party, is that you have pro-life organizations, legal institutes, think tanks, activist shops, being far more supportive of what the Supreme Court of Arizona said today than you actually see elected officials. This isn't universal, but it is generally true, and it is a kind of interesting divide. Many worried about November, many worried about post-November. That's a good way to think about it. 602-508-0960. Happy to take your calls on all of this and anything I didn't mention within it. We'll start with Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Seth. I, as a male, there are those who believe that males shouldn't be involved in making decisions.
Then
like
Roe
this.
Versus Wade never would have been a Supreme Court decision if that's true.
Well exactly. And I think personally it never should have been a constitutionally made federal Supreme Court decision, but that's just me because to me I thought they invented something that wasn't in the Constitution. Now we had Dobbs that kicked it back to the states. I think because it wasn't a federal constitutional issue, the states can rightfully come up with their own laws or not. And this is where I kind of get, into that sort of confusing stage or thought experiment stage where, supposing there was no law one way or the other, because maybe it's nobody's business what people have and what people do with their lives. Now, I'm almost sounding like I'm pro-choice, but I'm not.
No, I understand everything you're saying, and it's all making sense, and
yeah.
I'm tracking with you. Keep going.
Yeah, okay. I'm thinking mainly that because there's so many different reasons that women will have abortions, and it could be their either financially not ready, it would change their life, it would interfere with a job or an education, or, maybe they've already got kids and or dependents, they're just, too darn busy to have another mouth to feed. They can't afford a baby. Some are in a situation, maybe a bad relationship,
sure,
where they don't.
Yep, those are all the reasons.
They don't want to be a single mom. They have an abusive guy that they don't want to raise a baby with.
Right.
There's probably some who think they're too old. That they have one 20 years after their 20 years after.
Yeah, the Guttmacher Institute, which is the Guttmacher Institute, which is the research arm of Planned Parenthood, does these surveys from time to time, and it identifies every reason you just said. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's also obviously the issue of rape and a resulting pregnancy, which is very tragic, because that's one of the toughest ones, that you can imagine, I would think, were I a woman and raped and get pregnant as a result. Now, if we believe, and I think you and I both believe in the sanctity of human life, we're going to, be probably considered pro-lifers. And knowing that the mindset of most people have been relying so much in the last 40 or 50 years on the government, to solve every social problem there is.
Sure.
Maybe the government should just stay out of it altogether and we talk about
would
abortion.
Would that include late term abortions? Should the government stay out of, or partial birth?
That's a good question too. I think that, and having read a few statistics, I think it's at least over half of the abortions that take place are in the first trimester.
Overwhelming.
Yeah. And so the ones that are in the final trimester or birth, I think that's something that should have been taken care of or done long prior to the birthing process, but then people change their minds. So, there's the human element, and humans are imperfect. I don't know that it's really my business, anybody else's business, or the government's business, were I a woman and...
Do you think the unborn child is a human
pregnancy.
Life? Do you think
I do believe in them.
Then don't you think it's your business?
Well, it is my business from an idealistic pro-life standpoint, but I'm not the one. And again, I look at the abortion issue from the standpoint of when a woman does get pregnant.
Is it your business? Is it your business? I'm doing this as best I can, seminar wise, to think through the philosophical reasons. So you and I probably end up exactly on the same page at the end of the day. But just to tease it out for the thinking, the logic of it, is it your business if a 2-year-old child is being abused in a home that's not your own? Is that your business?
Realistically, it's none of my business, but ideally, yeah. I mean, I would be totally against
You don't have a moral
like
qualm
that.
With the law entering and saying we're going to step in here on behalf of the safety of the child at age two or one or 5 months.
Yeah, I don't have a qualm with that.
And the difference is?
And the difference is they are born. They are alive.
Okay.
They are
and that difference
in a bad,
is what? That difference is what?
Bad situation in a home life that may require relocation. And I just feel for people, especially the little ones, the innocent children who are in situations.
I'm pushing
like
you
that.
Hard. I'm pushing you hard here.
I know. And
let me push
that's
further.
Fine.
As long because you're a military guy, you can handle it. Let me push a little further. You can handle it. Push a little further.
Yeah. Here it comes.
Let's take a pregnant woman and have her child unborn murdered by an assailant with a knife or a gun. Let's have the mom survive. Is that a homicide? Let's have the mom die. Is it a double homicide?
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay. Then I don't know why I don't know why birth is distinctive.
It's a choice. Mrs. Robb's talking to me about this, and that's good because I always like inputs from her.
She wanted that.
She's implying. Well, she's telling me that the woman who is who got murdered
wanted that child. So that child's life protects. So the protection, I've heard her say she wanted that child. So that means that that child's life is dependent on someone else's choice. Okay, that is one way to look at it. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Kind of having a, what would you call it, young David, a philosophical seminar here over the abortion decision that the Arizona Supreme Court handed down today, and that we will, as a state, be wrestling with whether we like it or not one way or the other, whether the legislature picks it up and alters it, or whether Arizonans vote in November to overturn all of it or leave it to the legislature. There's also the question of whether there should be a federal law on this. Happy to do it all with you, and we are doing it all together. 602-508-0960. Let's first go to Leland in Phoenix. Hello, Leland.
Hi, Mr. Leibson.
Please, Seth. Please.
First of all, I just now started listening. I didn't hear your first hour. What was the Arizona Supreme Court's decision?
The Arizona Supreme Court decision was that the law that was originally written in 1864 and that was revalidated in 1978 will be the law for the state of Arizona. That is to say that abortions but for the life of the mother will not be tolerated.
Well, I hope that is the ultimate outcome, but it's like you said, that may not be. So
it may not be because of something called public opinion.
And, you know, the legislature to get involved. And we are having a citizens' initiative. So we'll
yes,
see.
And there will be, yeah, yes. So there's yes, right. So there's three or four ways this goes between now and November. There's the initiative in November. There's the legislature, which could do something between now and November. There's, of course, the option of doing nothing and letting this law stand. There's the option of the Attorney General of the state, which she has said will not enforce this law. So there's all kinds of interesting goings on here.
Well, that's interesting that she says she won't enforce the law. That actually goes straight to the comment I was going to make.
Yes, sir.
Are you familiar with any of the work of a fellow by the name of Dr. Francis Beckwith?
Yes, I certainly am, and it's taking me back a while. Yes. Francis Beckwith, yes,
yeah.
Professor?
I sat at many seminars and lectures and such.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Professor of philosophy, professor somehow related to Fordham University or something, maybe? Anyway, go ahead.
Is he?
Maybe.
Last I heard, he was at University of Las Vegas.
In any event, go ahead.
Anyway, he used to, you know, he wrote a book called Politically Correct Death, I mean, which is about all this. And he used to often comment that he was waiting to see what would happen in a state where you had vehicular homicide laws and had laws in the books that would get you charged with murder or at least manslaughter if you killed a child in utero, unborn yet. And he said, what if an abortionist driving drunk on his way to the abortion clinic hits a car with a woman, a pregnant woman in it, kills the baby in this accident, which makes him liable for manslaughter at least, or maybe even murder. And it just happened to be that woman was on her way to the abortion clinic for him to give her an abortion.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it just points to the absurdity of some of the, you know, I was just reminded of when you were asking the previous caller, you know, what if?
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, I think you were spot on, you know, if the infant in the womb is a human being, a person, which I think there's biologically and philosophically no way to contest that, really. Then
How is it not entitled to protection from the state, not just individuals? And I hope that the Supreme Court's ruling stands, and I hope we get an attorney general that will enforce that law. I know it will be rough, but this is part of the process, sort of the debate between the states that was going on back in 1973 and proceeding, and we were getting things sorted out, and all that was cut short by the Supreme Court when they passed Roe versus Wade or gave that ruling.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's great that we're back in that debate. But it,
well, let me ask you. Let me be hard on you for a second, Leland, if I might.
All
by
right.
the way, please call me Seth. Call me Seth. If you all hold right. the view all that right. you hold, which is that the unborn child is a human being whose life is worthy of protecting as a human being, how are you comfortable with a state allowing for abortions?
I'm not.
Okay. But you are that should be the law, that the states should make those laws, should have the right to make those laws? In other words, would you support a federal?
They do have the right to make those laws. I mean, they can make
they
can make laws saying, well, they don't have a moral right, but they have the political power. Let's just say they have the power to repeal murder laws in general, or kind of do what they've done the last couple of years, just don't enforce theft laws.
Right.
You know, if you steal less than $1,000,
right.
you know.
Right.
So now we have to get our deodorant from the store.
Right.
With a lock and key or
right,
whatever.
Right. The deodorant is locked up. The criminals are free, right? That's the state.
That's right.
Yeah.
But no, morally, they don't morally have the right. In fact, if they did pass the laws that say abortion is allowable, especially allowable.
You may have. Yeah.
And all that. But I think it was Martin Luther King himself and a bunch of others said, you know, an immoral law is not a law.
Right.
It's just a statute.
Right.
And it's not proper statute.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not going to be able to get to, you know, protecting, you know, unborn people, you know, universally the way we should for a long time. It's going to be hard. I mean,
yep.
Abraham Lincoln was, you know, vowed not to outlaw.
He was not an abolitionist.
Yeah, he just said, look.
He was not an abolitionist.
He didn't want the South to secede and get us in a civil war that might end up.
Yeah, the House could go one way or the other. Yeah, as he put it, the House would become all one thing or all the other. When I say he wasn't an abolitionist, what I meant by that is he wasn't willing with the stroke of a pen to outlaw all slavery. He didn't think he had that power. It changed a little bit during wartime. And, of course, his views, I think it's fair to say, changed a little bit as well. But, Leland, thank you. Let me do this. Let me do our culture and economy update with John Dombrowski. There are others on hold. If you will stay on hold, I will get to you after this next segment. 602-508-0960. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. John Dombrowski brings us our culture and economy update. For those of you on hold on the abortion issues, stick with us. We'll be with you shortly. John is the president and founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, grandcanyonplanning.com. website where you can learn more about what Grand Canyon might be able to do for you, and a good place to reach out to John. How are you today, sir?
Hey, Seth. How's it going? Doing great.
Doing well. Thanks for joining us again. It was my bad. I missed you. We usually have you in the first hour, but glad to have you. Now, I saw this story was kind of interesting over at CNBC. $1 million homes are now typical in a record number of U.S. cities.
Wow.
Talk to me about what this means.
Well, it's interesting. Reading through this article, they go all the way back to 2000. And in 2000, there were 17 or 18 cities in the country that were considered million-dollar cities. And then if you go 10 years out, in the year 2000, it was up to about 87 or so. Then in 2020, it was up to 240, so we saw a big spike. But just from 2020 to 2024 now, it's gone from 248 to 550.
Yeah.
It almost doubled
yeah.
the number of cities now that are in that million-dollar range for homes right now. It's really an amazing amount of wealth that has been created, Seth, from the valuation of real estate. But it does have consequences
yeah,
for
some
people.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those. Yeah, how do you see them?
Well, you know, the average person right now, can they really afford a $1 million house, right? So
right.
housing is becoming, in some cities, unattainable.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are looking for renting properties, but even the rental cost, we know we've talked about this, you know, over the past year or so, that the rent numbers are higher. So it's becoming very difficult for, you know, people who are entering the workforce, coming out of maybe college or even just attaining their first job and moving out of the house of their parents and looking to find ways and places to live. And so it's just very difficult. And this is where I really encourage people to do the best they can to really consider the long-term effects of, you know, building a good, solid investment strategy and a retirement strategy by contributing to your retirement accounts and forced savings in some fashion, so that when the time comes for you to be able to purchase a home, that you're going to have the resources to do so, have a good job and good credit. All of these things are going to be critical for people to be successful as they move forward with their financial life.
Does the effect of the Federal Reserve and what it may do towards the end of the year have anything to say about the price of homes?
Well, I believe that if they lower interest rates, that's going to create a definite more demand, right,
yeah,
for homes, which in some cases you have more buyers than sellers.
Yep.
Again, it may actually drive the prices even higher.
Yeah.
And then you've got, they call it in this article, that lock-in effect, which they're saying people who maybe have low interest rate mortgages are locked into those. They really can't get out of them because it's almost like golden handcuffs when you're working for a company. If you're getting paid a lot, you really can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar when you own a home and you have a 2.5% or 3.5% interest rate, and now the rates are 7+. Do you really want to sell your home and try to go for a different property with a much higher interest rate? Probably not. And that's why housing is in a shortage right now. And if rates do drop, which again, many believe that's going to happen, the Fed will be lowering rates at some point this year, that may spark another run again for people to try to get out there and purchase a home with lower rates. So it's going to be an interesting time moving forward. But again, proper planning, thinking long term, and being consistent with your savings and contributions to retirement accounts, it's really critical for, as I said, to be successful long-term in your financial life.
John, if you are meeting a very young couple starting out, right out of college, they maybe one or two incomes, do you recommend that they try and invest in a starter home pretty early on, or does it really depend on a whole ton of factors?
Well, I mean, if they have the resources are there, in
no.
other words, if they have enough for a down payment,
no.
if they have a good steady income that they feel confident that that's going to be something that's going to be there for them, and you know, are they planning to have children right away?
No.
You're right. There's factors that would go into how you would counsel someone like that, but investing in a home is good for you. Get the tax write off on the interest deduction. And you also potentially, as we've seen over the last 10 years, we can just see from these numbers, you get opportunity
yep.
to build equity in the home and growth, right, based
yep.
off of the increase in value.
Thank
so,
you.
Yeah, you it's a good, it. Good suggestion.
Thank you, John.
You bet. Again, go to our website, GrandCanyonPlanning.com. You can request an appointment with me right there. Securities and Advisory Services offered through Creative One Securities, LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates, LLC, and Creative One Securities, LLC, are not affiliated.
You're the best, Seth. John. Thank you. God bless. I am at 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Do we get to the Grace Slick on this? This
the
is
what?
Great. Huh?
The what?
We may have to start this song a little later. There it is. That's the voice I wanted. Grace Slick. Well done. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Oh, Doug is in Maricopa. Hello, Doug.
Hey, Seth.
How the heck are you? You decided to choose a very quiet and uncontroversial subject today, didn't you?
Yeah, vanilla. I did. I went plain.
Gosh almighty.
No moral conundrum here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have an opinion because I have an opinion about everything, and some of it is even valid, you know, a minor bit. But I kind of stand on both sides, and I'm going to try to build a case for standing on both sides. And basically it's like this. You know from our past talks how pro-life I am. My son-in-law was the product of a rape, and his mother chose to give him life. And I'm eternally grateful for her for that. And my wife and I decided early on in our marriage that if anything did happen, violent, abhorrent, that the baby, as the line in Rob Roy is, the baby is not the one that deserves to be punished. So we have a commitment all our lives for that kind of protection. It's life from conception. And I think when Rob called, you know, you heard it, a very standard thing being said is that the woman chooses. I think we got to be careful because in the Constitution and in our, in any, even if you're not, you know, spiritual in the sense of religious, it says that life and liberty, there is no, any right that we have in this country cannot come into being unless there is first life. And it's the first of all rights, the right to exist. And so the debate is not what is your desire. Your desires don't have anything to do with if it's life. The debate needs to be focused on, is it life or isn't it? And you know, and I think I'm very strong about that. And matter of fact, I think we even talked earlier that we moved up to Oregon for 2-3 years ago. Because our daughter had prom, you know, which is, you know, where you have amniotic fluid leaking, and the doctors wanted to abort, kill the child, and we went up, and she was on total bed rest, and we, you know, stopped all our business and doing everything to take care of her the whole winter until they won't even medically take care of her or the baby until the baby's over 20 or 30 weeks or 25 weeks, or, you know, there's a date. They don't consider it alive until that point. Now, here's the interesting thing is medically they say then it's alive and they'll work to take care of it. But, and my son was born young, 6 weeks early. Is his value based on our desire? He was perfectly healthy and perfectly formed. Babies are perfectly formed at, you know, 7.5 months. It's the last month and a half they're just gaining weight and strength. So they are live. They have life. They have brain waves. They have human brain waves. They can tell if it's a male or female brain waves. And it has four-chambered heart. It is human and it is alive. And so now is my choice has little value. And so so that's where I am. On the other hand, are you there, Seth?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Taking copious
that's
notes.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, everybody says, well, the woman wants, the woman wants, the woman wants, the woman wants. Okay, then the slave owner wants, the slave owner wants, the slave owner wants. They did not consider them, the black people, human beings. They, you know, and so everybody's like, well, it's the owner's choice. The owner. No, it's not. It had to do with the value of the human being in the eyes of God. And if that man who is black has the same soul that I have in God's eyes, then you cannot treat him any different than we treat ourselves. And that was the basis. That's where the evangelicals for 40 years fought that battle. So what I was going to say then is what we are doing is, and so I do believe in a national law, but I don't believe we can do it where we throw an atomic bomb onto our political reality, because there will be no Republicans to fight any battles, including the abortion battle. And if we look to what the abolitionists did, it was fought by the evangelicals. And you've heard me quote the Grimke sisters from South Carolina, just tenacious little ladies, and many hundreds and thousands like her. It was a 40-year education to teach the average Northerner that you can't just turn your head and say, well, I don't believe in it, but that's their problem. That's what women are saying, where I don't believe in it, but it's their choice. No, if it's alive, it's not their choice. If it's not alive, then we'll talk. But the debate has to stay focused on life. And then we have to realize the main battle is an education, and we are lousy at it. The Democrats are good at it. But we cannot politically win until we win the argument, the debate, the moral high ground. And as we win that,
let me pause you right there, because I think you've got the horns of dilemma perfectly sketched out. Republicans want to win. Democrats want to win. Republicans want to win, and many Republicans want to win because they are pro-life.
Yes, yes.
Many Republicans think that unless they win, we will continue to lose the life issue, whether by Democrats' laws or by the evisceration of pro-life protections.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And yet they will say, as you have said, that, you know, life is human before it's born and deserves protection. But XYZ. And we can all agree the XYZ on the matter of prudential as a matter of prudential politics. But it does make those who say it, that is to say you and me, it makes us sound hypocritical. It does.
No. It's strategic, but I could get into the strategy. It's actually very logical.
I'm with you on it. I think it's strategic, but it does have the air of hypocrisy. When someone says, I'm pro-life, I believe it is wrong to kill an unborn child, but we shouldn't have legislation on it, or we will yield to whatever the majority decides. It's a real problem that we have yet to be able to communicate well. Portions of this show brought to you by our friends at YRefi. YRefi has a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. They give you a ton of flexibility and control. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi, and there is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. They're headquartered here locally. Their offices are on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. They're happy to have you visit them. I've been there any number of times. You won't be asked to sign a thing. You won't get any kind of sales pitch whatsoever. If you don't visit them, check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI-24. Wade is in Peoria. Hi, Wade.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Hey, I find it very ironic that Katie Hobbs would ask the legislatures to get this right, whatever that is in her mind. But everything that they put across her desk, she vetoes anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was her comment, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And
I think we both.
Go ahead. I thought she was a Catholic, and that's a whole different story, I guess.
Yeah,
I know. I'm Catholic too.
I know. Joe Biden too. John Kerry as well. I know. Some people thought Chuck Schumer was Jewish. Yeah, that's a whole other issue. But you know, the legislative fix, we're all operating under a bit of a bad joke here. Katie Hobbs is not going to sign off on what the majority of the legislature is going to vote when it comes to this issue. She is not going to sign off on the same let us say legislation that Doug Ducey signed in 2022 that a very similar legislature gave him. She's not going to sign that. And then, of course, to override it would require a supermajority, which we don't have when we're holding a seat,
right.
A majority by one seat in, I believe, both chambers. So all of this is kind of, if it's not a bad joke, it's certainly a political fiction that we're operating under. Don't think for a moment that the Democrats are not as happy as the most ardent pro-lifers today, in the sense that they have a huge political victory, they think. They think they have a huge political victory to move on. And I think for political expedience and exploitation of this issue, they will want to see this be the law of the state going into November. And that, as they say, is the hell of it. I'm Seth. We'll be right back.